The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 6th canto, chapter number 2, text number 11, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasadhikari, recorded on December 26th, 2009, in Govinda Valley, Australia.
So today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, canto number 6, chapter number 2, text number 11. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo
Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Na niskritair uditair brahmavadibhis tatava shudyat yagavan vritadibhi yata harer nama padair udahritais tadutama shloka guno palambakam Na niskritair uditair brahmavadibhis tatava shudyat yagavan vritadibhi yata harer nama padair udahritais tadutama shloka guno palambakam Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that the chanting of the holy name of the Lord has special significance that distinguishes it from the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies of atonement for severe, more severe, or most severe sinful actions. There are 20 types of religious scriptures called Dharma Shastras, beginning with the Manu Samhita and Parashara Samhita. But herein, it is stressed that although one may become free from the reactions of the most sinful activities, by following the religious principles of these scriptures, this cannot promote a sinful man to the stage of loving service of the Lord. On the other hand, chanting the holy name of the Lord even once not only frees one immediately from the reactions of the greatest sins, but also raises one to the platform of rendering loving service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is described as Uttama Shloka, because he is famous for his glorious activities. And thus, one serves the Lord by remembering his form, his attributes, and the pastimes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that this is all possible simply by chanting the Lord's holy name because of the Lord's omnipotence. What cannot be achieved through the performance of Vedic rituals can easily be achieved through the chanting of the Lord's holy name. To chant the holy name and dance in ecstasy is so easy and sublime that one can achieve all the benefits of spiritual life simply by following this process. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu declares, Parang Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. All glories to the Sri Krishna Sankirtan. The Sankirtan movement we have started offers the best process for becoming purified of all sinful reactions and coming immediately to the platform of spiritual life. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Jata Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam
Sangrajata Sagana Raghunatan Vitam Dam Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvitamscha.
So, somebody commits a crime, and they're apprehended by the government, and they put them in the prison. Actually, sometimes the prisons are called reformatories, but actually they did not reform. When they get in the prison, who do they associate with? Criminals. And they learn all kinds of tricks from each other, how to be better criminals, more expert criminals. So when they come out, again they commit crime, you see. Because the tendency to commit crime has not been rectified. Even though, according to the law, they are free from the reaction because they serve their time. But the tendency to commit crime is still there. So again, they go commit crime, again go back to the prison. In this way, they remain caught up. So, also in the Vedas, there are different systems for atonement. How to counteract a sinful action with a atoning action which neutralizes it. But the difficulty with this Vedic atonement processes is that, like the prisoner who went to prison, who went out and became a criminal again, the tendency to engage in sinful life still remains. So again, you commit a sin, do an atonement, commit a sin, atonement. You're not really getting ever free from the entanglement. The tendency to commit sinful activities remains in the heart. But this process from the Vedas, as we read yesterday from the Kali Santarana Upanishad, this process, chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. This process not only frees you from the reactions of your past sin, but it frees you from the tendency to commit sin again. Therefore, this of all the processes given in the Vedas for purifying oneself, this is the supreme process. That's why Lord Chaitanya says, Param Vijayate Shri Krishna Sankirtanam. This is the most glorious process because it takes the disease out at the very root. If someone has a garden and some weeds come, they know you have to pull the weed out by the root. If you just chop it off on the surface, then it comes back again. So the Vedic ritualistic ceremonies, they're like chopping it off at the surface, you see. But because the root is still there, and then in due course that weed comes out again, you see. But through the process of Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga system, we go in to the very root and rip it up. As is stated, in the Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, text number 2, such truth uproots the threefold miseries. You see, it doesn't give just simply a temporary relief, but actually goes in and uproots the threefold, the threefold miseries, and the entanglement within the modes of nature. Those things are uprooted, pulled out by the roots. So this Srimad Bhagavatam, it is called Amalam Puranam. It is the Patas Purana, because it brings one to the supreme position, beyond the modes of nature, completely free from the influence of the modes of material nature. That's why it is considered the very best. You see, there are 18 Puranas. There are 6 in Tamagun, 6 for those in Rajagun, 6 for those in Sattvagun, and of the 6, the one for pure goodness is the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, if you are at all interested in getting free from karma chakra, in getting out of the cycle of birth and death completely free, then it is advised that you should follow the Srimad Bhagavatam, because this text will teach you how to become situated beyond the modes of material nature, simply by chanting the name of Krishna with love. All success, all happiness, all perfection will be yours. We don't have to go through so many steps to gradually come to the perfectional stage. Why take the steps when you can take the elevator? If you had an appointment on the top floor of the Empire State Building in New York City, very tall building, we would have given the World Trade Center as an example, but Osama bin Laden took that example away. So that was the old example from the old days, the Empire State Building. We go back to that old example. Let's say you have an appointment on the top floor of the world of the Empire State Building, and you decide, well, I'm going to take the steps. I'm not going to go in the elevator. You see, by the time you get to the 108th floor or whatever is up there, it's 5 o'clock and the office is closed for the day. So you missed your appointment, you see. So the intelligent person, he just gets on the elevator, and goes straight to his appointment, no difficulty. So the bhakti yoga system, you see, I mean, you go straight to the top. Anyone who becomes a bhakti yoga master, they are considered a master of every yoga system, hatha yoga, jnana yoga, ashtanga yoga, this yoga, that yoga. One is automatically the master of all yogas by becoming a master of the bhakti yoga system. So there is no need to do this thing and that thing to elevate the consciousness. Just chant Hare Krishna mantra with love and devotion, and all success, all perfection will be yours. Krishna will become your property. Because by chanting Hare Krishna with love, one's heart melts and one surrenders oneself fully. Let Krishna take me. I am now his property. I'm giving up my false declaration of independence from God, realizing actually I'm dependent on minute, every minute. How I can declare independence? That is a false thing. For every breath, just now I am breathing. Just imagine if all of a sudden we lost the air, we were all suffocating. We'd be desperate for a breath of air, you see. But Krishna is providing air. We're breathing. We're drinking water. So many facilities. Krishna is giving everything. Eko bahunam yo vidadati kamam. He is giving us all necessities of life. So, we should be grateful we should show the Supreme Person that we appreciate his kindness. We reciprocate it with it. We should, he's giving us love. Now we should also give love from our side. That is Krishna consciousness. That how you can take without reciprocation, you see. That is called miser. You know, in English, of course, that there's a, you see the connection between miser and miserable? It's a very nice connection in English language. Miser means miserable. If you're a miser, that means you're thinking you're the center of enjoyment. Everything is for your enjoyment. Well, you're going to be miserable, Mr. Miser. Because you're not the center of enjoyment. If the hand thinks, why should I serve the belly? I will just take the food separately. Will that hand get any nourishment out of the food? There's an example given in the Vedas, actually. One time, I've told the story before, but it's very nice. One time, the parts of the body, they got together and had a meeting. And they said, what is this nonsense? They had the meeting without the stomach. So they decided to form a union and go on strike. Now what is this rascal, the stomach? And he's simply exploiting us. So we will have a strike. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. The stomach is a capitalist pig. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. And when they were chanting their mantra with great enthusiasm on the first day of their strike. But the second day, they started to get a little weaker. Don't feed the stomach, don't feed the stomach. The third day was, I think we better call another meeting of the union. And they realized we can't survive if we don't feed the stomach. So we are trying to enjoy separately from God. But it is futile. You cannot, it is not possible. The living entity becomes happy by giving pleasure to the Supreme Person. That's how the living entity becomes happy. That's why, in spite of all the material advancement of the modern day civilization, people are miserable because they have a miserly consciousness. Therefore, they must be miserable. Doesn't matter how much facility they have, they will be miserable because they are not devoted to the Supreme Person. So this chanting process is so sublime, it is so wonderful, that it reawakens that natural tendency within the heart to serve the Supreme Person. See, we have that innate tendency in the heart, but it has been suppressed by the materialistic civilization which we have taken our births. They have literally beaten it out of us. You see? They teach that God is a myth. In the university, a professor propounds atheism, there's no problem. But he propounds faith in the Supreme Person, faith in God, then he can lose his position. One professor, he was encouraging the kids, you should all have boyfriends and girlfriends. In other words, you know, have sex with everyone. You can have gay sex, you can have heterosex, just enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. He was, in the class, he was encouraging the students to become bisexual, to have all kinds of sex pleasures, you see. And he, there's no difficulty. He can remain in his position with such kind of nonsense in the classroom. But if someone says there is a Supreme Person and we must surrender to him, he's out. You see, get out. No religion allowed here. You see. It's such a ridiculous civilization. It's so ridiculous. And the people who sit on the Supreme Court, what qualification do they have? What qualification do they have to know how what is right and what is wrong? They have no qualification. So we need good government on this planet. We need Krishna conscious persons to be running the governments of this planet. Mother Earth is crying now. She is weeping in agony at the horrible things that they are doing on this planet. Horrible things, unspeakably horrible things they are doing on this planet. So we have a great mission, we have a great calling to become Krishna conscious, to awaken the Krishna consciousness within our hearts, and then give that Krishna consciousness freely, liberally, to everyone that we possibly can. Because this will make us happy and this will make the whole world happy. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
You were saying that we need to make the people that are running the government Krishna conscious. do you suggest that we approach them with the Bhagavad Gita and try to get the message across to them?
What is he saying?
Should we give our leaders the Bhagavad Gita?
Yes, you can do that. Whether they read it or not is another matter, of course. Sometimes they do. In the U.S., President Carter, he read our Bhagavad Gita. He was going to India. That's for his business as president. So on the way there, he read our Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita as it is. Devotees told me he had read that. So sometimes it works. I've done it also, but you know, they can accept so many things just to look nice. Yes, I appreciate your gift, and then, you know, that's it. So yes, it's very good. Obama got a Bhagavad Gita as it is. Somebody who was the sister, I think it was the sister of his childhood schoolmate, is a devotee. So through that connection, they're able to present him a Bhagavad Gita. But even if the leaders in democracy, even if the leader is Krishna conscious, he doesn't have that much power. You see, you have to have the Supreme Court lined up and the legislators also lined up for something really to merely make dramatic changes. Because if he tries to do something, they'll just say, "Oh, this is unconstitutional. You can't do this." So, yeah, anything we can do to educate the leaders in Krishna consciousness is very good. All sorts of leaders are there, educational leaders, business leaders. In all spheres of life, we should try to see that the leaders are Krishna conscious. So, since we are Krishna conscious, then we should also, we have a duty to become leaders ourselves, you see. So you are Krishna conscious, men and women. Therefore, you should become leaders in whatever way you can, as much as possible. You become leaders wherever you are. That people look to you for leadership. They see in you leadership qualities. They want to follow you. Yad yad atarachi shreshtas tattare vetaro jana sayat pramanam kurute lokastad anuvartate. Whatever a great man does, the common people follow in his footsteps. Whatever standard he sets by exemplary acts, all the world pursues. So you all should become leaders. In whatever sphere of influence you are now living, you become the leader. So the others will look up to you and want to follow you. You see, this is required. Prabhupada told us we would have 10 million acharyas within ISKCON. So we need that. You all become leaders, ideal Vaishnavas, Goswamis, who have brought their senses completely under control. This is required in our movement. Any other questions? Yes.
What is exactly meant by atau
Can it be atonement be used to get rid of offenses to the holy name? What did you say?
What is meant?
Atonement means a ritual that you can, some ritualistic ceremony, or you can do to counteract different types of sins. There are different rituals that you can do to neutralize different types of sins. But those don't rectify the tendency to sin, so therefore they are imperfect and incomplete.
Can fasting long time be considered atonement?
I haven't studied the atonements because I don't need them. I have Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So if you want to, you can try doing some research to see what are the atonements given in the Vedas. I don't know what they are because I don't need them. But there are many different types of atonements for many different types of sinful activities. Now, as devotees, we don't have to do them. And if one thinks, well, I'm going to do that because... No, then you're not understanding the process. We should simply take the process as it's coming down from these from our acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We should simply take what they have given, not try to come up with some other new way of doing it. You see, well, I read in this Purana or that Samhita about this atonement, so now I'm going to promote this. We should all be doing this thing because it's there in the Vedas. You see. That can be a subtle desire for name and fame, actually, instead of, well, I want to be more Vedic. The system of purification given by our acharyas, that we follow. Not that we research the Vedas and show ourselves as the most learned person and everyone should follow my instructions, that this is what we should do. No, Prabhupada gave the very simple process coming down from Lord Chaitanya. Chant Hare Krishna, dance in ecstasy, take prasadam. And this way, one becomes free of all the demoniac tendencies and all the reactions from past sin. One thing mentioned is, every morning in the Tulsi prayers, Yani Kani Chapapani Brahma Hitadda Kani Cha. Tani Tani Pramasayandi. In this way, it says just by step, by going around the Tulsi, one can nullify all sins, even the killing of a Brahmana. So we have everything. We have Tulsi Parikrama, we have Hare Krishna Kirtan, we have everything we need to become completely pure, even the grossest of sins. So therefore, we should simply take this process with great enthusiasm, determination, and patience. Does that answer your question? Yes? Yes?
Maharaj, you mentioned about spreading Krishna consciousness. In this regard, I remember when Srila Prabhupada arrived at one of the airport, and in his arrival address, one reporter asked him that why have you come here? He said that I don't need any invitation to come here. Any transcendentalist who is doing Krishna conscious preaching does not need any invitation. And in fact, from his example, like he applied for Russia visa several times and he was rejected, but he kept on inviting, applying, and finally he got a visa for one week or 10 days. So, like, is this principle still applicable?
Yes, actually, Prabhupada told Mula Prakriti Devi Dasi, my god sister, that actually preaching means aggressive. In other words, he says, I was not invited to come, but I came as an aggressor. She was wondering, well, you know, the in Vedic culture, the ladies, they are meant to be very shy. So she was thinking, well, is this really proper for me to go out in the airport and be an aggressive book distributor, you know, approaching everybody very aggressively and getting big donations from them and giving them as many books as possible? Is this really proper for a woman to do this? And Prabhupada gave her all encouragement, saying that I came as an aggressive. So he encouraged her to be a lamb at home and a lion in the chase, you see. So, yes, that principle is there. Prabhupada came as an aggressor without any invitation. But within one's home, the lion in the chase and a lamb at home, when you're actually dealing with the other devotees, you see, then one should be more, just like the other day, for example, I went down to the temple room, a devotee was scheduled to give the class, and he wasn't there. And the devotee said, you know, why don't you just, they said, Sankarshan Prabhu, why don't you, you know, start Jai Radha Madhava. They were encouraging me to go ahead and start giving the class. I said, I cannot do that. Somebody else is scheduled to do it. Their name is written on the schedule. I cannot do. You see? And then I said, but if the temple president instructs me to do it, then I can do. And as soon as I said that, the temple president walked in the door immediately. And I said, oh, you have a long life. Immediately he walked in the door and said, Sankarshan Prabhu, can you give the class? You see? So if there's, because we're dealing within the ISKCON families, if I'm just going out into the world of non-devotees, I can be as aggressive as I can get away with. But when I'm at home amongst the devotees within this institution, within our spiritual family, it's not that I can be the same type of aggression there that I could dealing with the non-devotees. Then I have to observe the etiquettes. So I was not aggressive to just jump on the Vyasasthana and start giving a class. Just imagine if I did that and then the devotee came in, he was a little late, and now he's come to give the class and there I am sitting on the Vyasasthana. It'd be a very embarrassing thing, you see. So a lion in the chase and a lamb at home. When it comes to dealing with our fellow devotees, we have to be very respectful of their positions and their moods and be subordinate. Place ourselves in a subordinate way to them. Even Prabhupada played a subordinate role. He was the most aggressive person on one hand, and he was the most humble, non-aggressive person also. And there's one nice pastime in this connection. That, of course, this was the old days before we had all the security at the airports. Everybody could go into the airport and right there by the gate. So it was a huge crowd, like 300 devotees who were there to see Prabhupada off. And if you can imagine what this did to the airport, it completely choked up the airport. There was no, people couldn't get through. The whole place was just packed with devotees. And the airport authorities were in great anxiety, you know, this is causing traffic problems. In the airport, people are going to be late for their flight. I mean, we have to ask these Hare Krishna people to clear the area. I mean, so they were going on asking devotees, can you please move? But Prabhupada was sitting there, you see. And, you know, nobody, what devotee wants to be asked by some karmi, can you leave this area? Prabhupada was there. They didn't want to leave Prabhupada's darshan. And so they kept asking different devotees, and it was futile. Not one devotee would leave the area because they wanted to have Prabhupada's darshan, to hear the nectar coming from his lotus mouth, you see, whatever he might say. So anyway, they finally got a hold of one of the GBCs, and he understood the gravity of the situation. So he got up, he stood up on the chair and said, all devotees, immediately leave this area. He made a big authoritative announcement, you know. But still, not one devotee would budge, even when the GBC made the announcement, because Prabhupada is sitting there. But there was one devotee who did get up to leave the area. Can you imagine who it was? His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. I'm a devotee. The announcement was made by the GBC, and Prabhupada is thinking, well, I'm a devotee. The GBC has announced that all the devotees must leave, so I must leave. Prabhupada got up to leave the area. So On one hand, the devotee is the most aggressive. As Prabhupada was the most aggressive. But when it came to being humble, there was nobody more humble than Prabhupada. You see? The GBC said that all the devotees have to leave, so I might as well get up and leave. The announcement has been made. You see? So, when it comes to in-house dealings, no, we are not aggressive in that way. We're very humble and meek when it comes to dealing within our spiritual family. Next question.
This chanting and becoming devotee will also take care of performing ceremonies for our ancestors and forefathers?
You're asking about ceremonies for the ancestors? Actually, this Hare Krishna Kirtan gives the greatest blessing to the ancestors. Everything is covered. So you don't have to worry about this ritual and that ritual. If you just perform the Sankirtan Yajna, that is the most powerful yajna for purifying everything and blessing everyone. Next question? Yes.
Sanskaras?
Actually, some devotee made that Sanskara book. That's a good profit-making opportunity. Actually, just like there's the Garbhadang Sanskara. Prabhupada never gave us the details of the Garbhadang Sanskara. He gave us our ISKCON version, which is to chant 50 rounds before having sex. So yeah, Prabhupada has simplified all these sanskaras, and it's not actually, we don't need to go and do all this research to have all these fancy sanskaras with all these elaborate rituals. It's not really required. I mean, when it comes to initiations, I still follow the old system that Prabhupada did when he gave initiations. Sometimes, though, devotees have all these fancy things from the scriptures. So I just say, okay, because I was in Delhi and I was planning to do the yajna. I was initiating three disciples, and I like to do the yajna. I really, it's a sweet taste for me to do the yajna, to initiate some new disciples. But the devotees, they'd been trained up in Mayapur how to do all the elaborate rituals. So I realized I went in Delhi do as the Delhi Wallahs do. I realized that's what they do here. If I did the simple Prabhupada style thing, they'd think, what is this nonsense? Everybody would find fault with me. I'd be sitting there and get all these stares from all the people. What is he doing anyway? This simple, easy thing, you know. So I let him do the complicated ritualistic thing because that's what they do. So. And then when they were installing deities sometimes, like in Vrindavan, the devotees had the Vrindavan pandits come and do all these elaborate rituals, which Prabhupada said weren't even necessary. We did it just for the sake of PR with the local people. This Sankirtan Yajna, it covers everything. So we don't need to... Prabhupada never told us that we had to strictly follow the different sanskaras. He just gave us a very simple way. So, we should stick with this mood of Prabhupada and not try to introduce so many different rituals, add this ritual and that one and this one and that one. We can ritualize ourselves to death if we start wanting to bring in every Vedic ritual to our movement. They're not necessary. In this yuga, Kali Yuga, all the types of yagas, they are forbidden. Simply, chant Hare Krishna mantra. That is the all auspicious thing. There's so many different prescriptions. But if we will follow simply this Hare Krishna Kirtan process of Lord Chaitanya, then everything will be covered. Whatever simple Sanskaras Prabhupada has given. If they want to do a little bit more elaborate, it's all right. I don't object. But if they just want to keep increasing, make it more and more ritualist, more and more rituals, more and more rituals, this becomes it's a distraction from the real essence of what we're doing, is to awaken our Krishna consciousness. Next question? Yeah.
It's said that if you go back to Godhead, your 16 generations of forefathers, they go back to Godhead as well?
Yes, there it's stated like that. 16 generations, 21 generations, yeah.
So how does that work? Because you see in the...
Well, there's one way to find out, and that's to do it. You become a pure devotee. And then you will see how it happens.
And if you see the...
It happens by the inconceivable mercy of Krishna. That's how it happens. So if you want to really experience it, then you must become a pure devotee. And then you can see, just as Dhruva Maharaj, he was in great anxiety while here. It was my mother, after all, my dear mother, Suniti. She told me to go to the forest and I would find Vishnu. I did that. I've now become spiritually perfect. I'm going back to God. And how can I possibly go without my dear mother? My dear mother, my dear Mataji, who told me to go to the forest. And then they pointed, the Vishnu Dutas pointed, see that airplane over there? She's also going back the same time you were going back. So how it will happen with you, that will be seen. But it does happen. That's a fact.
But in the same context, when Dhruva Maharaj was there, his later descendants was King Anga and King Mena. So King Mena was a big demon. And how is it possible?
So do they say that people who come after you, or the people that come before you? I always understood it was the people who come before you. Your father, your grandfather, in that direction. I don't remember it. Does it say both directions?
No, it's only one direction. Because in the case of Prahlada, the three sapta, that is 3 to 7, 21 generations before Prahlada went back to
God. Well, it depends on the purity of the devotee also. I mean, there's this. If you're more pure, you can deliver more generations also. So we should all strive to become completely pure devotees. Because the more you have purity, the more the potency will act. Next question. We have 2 minutes, just enough time for one more question. I'm humbly obeying the schedule. You see, it ends at 8:35, which is 2 minutes from now. Yes?
We were talking about these rituals. But the more the elaborate rituals we do, wouldn't it, instead of rectifying the situation, can it be also leading to us mistakes and more deeper offenses?
Well, if you're doing all of it in the context of the Sankirtan Yajna, then Krishna won't take it as offense. But if we forget the essence of Krishna consciousness and want to, you know, take advantage of the different rituals, thinking that will save us and deliver us, that is offense. That's dhyamagraha, becoming too attached to rules and regulations. So there has to be a proper balance. Dhyamagraha has a dual meaning. It means to be too attached to rules and regulations, or too negligent, too much neglecting rules and regulations. We have to have a proper balance between those two, and that we learn from Prabhupada. By studying Prabhupada's mood, Prabhupada's style, we understand where do you draw the line What's being too neglectful or too attached to rules and regulations? What is the proper balance? This is not the International Society for Rules and Regulations. This is the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So we accept rules and regulations, we accept rituals insofar as they help us to be Krishna conscious. And we reject rules and regulations and rituals which impede our Krishna consciousness. That is the rule of thumb in this connection. So we'll stop here. We thank you very much for your attendance in this retreat. Nandaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.